Hello, come in. Lie down. Relax. Take a deep breath in. And now breathe out. We'll be your therapists today. You're listening to Triathlon Therapy.
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
We're going to let Steve do the intro because he just gets rambling and doesn't know what he's saying. And then he normally says, I'm just rambling. I don't know what I'm saying. So we've teed him up to do the start. Just basically it'll be more than likely terrible. And then we can only go up from there, mate.
Good.
If we wait for Steve much longer, you might miss your flight though at this point.
So. I can't bag Steve out. I said yes to this interview, Nick, not realizing that I'd be driving kids to swimming training. So apologies to all listeners. I'm on my phone driving.
Not on my and there he goes. He just phone.
Let's talk about Frankfurt before Steve gets on. First of all, Nick, like, super bummed about we can do we'll still get Steve to do your intro, that'll be funny. But we'll pretend that we haven't already started and let him do the intro. First of all, Nick, sorry to hear about the crash. Was it just a bit wet out there? Is that what was bringing people down?
Yeah, I don't think it had rained for weeks or something, and then just overnight and for the first few hours of the day just bucketed. So kind of I think the roads are real slick, and I'm sure you know, like, races in Europe, you get these really straight, chill country roads between towns, then you get to towns and it's just hectic. And I know, like, I haven't really chatted to many people, but the people that I have chatted to also came down. There were crashes left, right, and center. But I after the second one, I just kind of pulled the pin in the head and rolled back to town and called it a day.
So just back to the start. Like, I watched the start of it, Nick. 80 pros, I think, started the race. So that was how many were on the start list. Hectic. You had a good swim. Or do you want to just run us through the start of your day and we'll kind of go from there?
Yeah. It was a bit of a hectic start of the swim. There was, I think, 77 or 78 that ended up like starting the race. You know how it is. It can be someone who's going to swim 130 pace and they still want to jump to the very front. So it was on the beach start. So I kind of just hung at the back and the gun went off and then you can kind of just look around and see who's doing what and then start diving in. And I was pretty lucky that I managed to hop back on the back of the really long front swim group, I suppose, because there were so many strong swimmers that I guess each gap was filled and it wasn't too hectic, but it definitely felt fast for me. A lot of those guys up the front are really strong swimmers and you could definitely feel it. Yeah.
Did you feel the, as you came out that Aussie exit, I noticed you were right at the back of that front group there and then there was a gap. As you went back in the water, it seemed to stretch out. Did they kick off a bit harder as you came out of the or back in after the Aussie exit?
Oh yeah, like after that, it was pretty miserable. I think everyone hates. Well, the idea of it is fun, but I'm pretty sure everyone jumping back in the water after an Aussie exit feels like 10 times worse. But I think everyone was hurting because you're right, there was like a few seconds gap between a few people there at that halfway point, but it kind of came back together. So I'm pretty sure everyone was kind of suffering after that exit and entry, which actually turned out to be a bit of a blessing. And then like a few more turning boys in like a bit of a triangle for the second part of the swim. And after each turning boy, it's a bit of a dick swing and a surge again. But yeah, all in all, because it was such a, I think there must have been like 15 odd people just strung out in a line, which is then what, like 30 or 40 meters of people. All in all, it made it just manageable. And but it still felt hard, like really hard, just to even hang on to me. Like I'm not a top swimmer. Like I can't go out and swim like a 1 minute 100 and then settle into race pace. I was just hanging on for dear life the whole time. But yeah, maybe overcooked it, but it was pretty cool coming out close to the front group.
And then
speaking of, did you describe it as another swing of the dick at some point there? Is that what you said?
Just like, you know how it is, each kind of boy, turning boy, whether it's a 90 degree or less, everyone just kind of has a bit of a dick swing around those and just makes it
sure.
10 I'd times really more, like, more miserable.
Nick, I heard really
that expression. And I remember the thing I thought of straight away was you chasing down after a bad swim at Busso last year. And I was like, now that is a swing of the dick.
Nick's got the biggest dick of all.
You were going so hard.
And on that note, we'd just like to introduce Steve back on straight into the dick chat. How are you, Steven?
Yeah, I was like, oh, thank God we're talking about dicks.
This is probably a bit too lowbrow for you, Steve. Sorry.
So, like, as soon as I heard that, I'm like, all right, I'll stay signed in.
Oh, I'm going to try and keep this going. So
No, stop. We need the intro from Steve first.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. We are joined today by Tom Nixon. Nick Thompson. No, Nick, I'm really bad at intros, so they're trying to get me to do one. I haven't rehearsed it. Have no idea on Nick's stats, but I respect him as a racer. He's a very, very, very nice guy. He's a fair racer, and he's so good at this sport that he doesn't rely on other people when he races. He just rocks up and he can do his own race plan and throw any smart plan out the window and still win a race. So love seeing him make his way up the ranks in Oceania. But yeah, it's frustrating seeing him, such a talent, go overseas. And this is what happens. You travel overseas and you have frustrating races, and I think it'll take you a while to get the result, your potential. But I think it's just Reedy is good for advice on this stuff. It's like I've gone overseas and come dead last at the Canadian Open, and things can happen when you travel that far, and there's just lots more pressure. And yeah, I think you just have to stick at it until it happens, and then all of a sudden you'll be winning races over there, and we can't wait to see it.
Well said, Steve. Thank you. Totally agree. And I also would like
to say... He's got a big dick.
We're going to have to edit that.
We get the tape measures out.
Oh, God. All right.
The reason I was excited to have you on is when you walked past me at Sunshine Coast, I was like, oh, that's Nick Thompson. And the first thing I thought was, he is so bloody short. And I was like, there's another one of us out there, someone who can do triathlon who's really, 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 really short. So good for you.
Yeah, I remember when I was first starting out, my first coach, he gave me a book to read, and it was who was that Ironman athlete that had to retire because of heart problems? Is it
Greg Welsh?
He's like, yeah, read this. I'm pretty sure it was just a bit of a like, you're short, but it's possible, mate, if you believe.
All right, we're out of the swim on the weekend, Nick. You're in the front group. You look around, you would have been pretty pumped about that. It seemed you got onto the bike towards the back end of the group. What was the dynamics through T1 and that first 10K or so?
Through T1, out of the water, there's like a bit of a... not a steep climb, but it's definitely an uphill, and everyone was kind of just jogging, and it wasn't too fast paced. It was a little bit of a blur, to be honest, but yeah, I was definitely at the back end, and I had an okay T1, the marshals were like stopping some, or the refs were stopping some people for 60-second penalties. I know, I'm pretty sure that's what happened to Braden Curry, and I think the Swedish athlete Jesper Svensson got one as well, because they were running while putting their bib number on, which was pretty interesting because I don't know if that's even a rule. Like I looked through, I don't want to say it is or isn't because I'm not a ref, but I looked through the rules and it isn't. So that was happening, and Christian was sitting down putting his taking his time putting his aero sleeve, a calf sleeves on, and then got on the bike, and yeah, the first 10K, I think I caught the back of the group within a couple K, and it was pretty chill. It was quite flat for the first 20K with a tailwind, and then it kind of became rolling, and it was about a group of 15 of us, and there was a German guy off the front by himself. But the group of 15, it did kind of bunch up a little bit on the climbs, but I think everyone was riding pretty fair, at least when I was there.
For listeners, can you explain what advantage is there in a group like that, even when everyone's not breaking the rules?
I guess there's, so the drafting distance is 12 meters, but then you still get an aerodynamic advantage from being 12 meters behind the rider in front.
Oh, sort of answer thing. It like this, Nick. What was your power there versus Busselton? You don't have to tell us the numbers, or the difference would be cool.
Oh, it was actually pretty similar. Like, everyone was riding really hard.
What speed was that for compared to Busso?
It would have been a similar speed, but with maybe more elevation. It was a group of like 12 of us. It was a huge train, and to be fair to him, I think Christian was on the front most of the time, just pushing his own plan. But at least from what I saw, except on the steeper climbs in the cobbled section, everyone was pretty fair. Like probably even more than 17 meters between bikes. In that group.
What was the media like? I know in the past in German races, and a lot of races really, the bigger the pro field, sometimes the more media there is out there, which, you know, obviously creates a huge drag effect as well. But I know they've cracked down since the unfortunate death of the official or a media person. How did they police that? Was it pretty limited?
I know there was a media bike at the front with the German guy. I think his name is Willem Hirsch. He was off the front by himself. There was a media bike there. There was maybe one media bike and one or two referees riding to the side of our group with a good 4 or 5 meters to the side. I think for most of the time, the majority of the road was closed. So it wasn't two-way traffic with bikes. What happened with when there was the accident last year, they always say in the briefings that they try and stay out of the way. And I think they did a pretty good job, not towing, like not having a train of 10 media bikes, kind of like diagonally in front of the group. So I think they did a pretty good job from when I was around.
That's pretty interesting, because if you look at the way the race panned out, Trevor Foley and Sam Long were like 16 minutes back or something and were making no time at all. And I was just watching the splits thinking, oh, that's just because they don't have media with them, but there just must have been enough firepower at the front to keep the pace hot enough to keep them away.
Yeah, there were a lot of hungry Euro boys that were like pushing, and so that sort of first group was about 12 people, and then after I crashed, about 30k later, the second group came past me, but that was a completely different story. There were about 20 there. It's about halfway through the bike. People are a bit more tired, so they aren't really maybe making passes when they get into the draft zone because they're a bit more fatigued. So that was a little bit of a mess, but it was a pretty undulating course. And yeah, I don't think I was kind of hanging off the back of that group, like 20 meters, because I was a bit concerned because I did get a drafting penalty in the last Ironman I did in Cairns. So it did feel pretty hard on the back, like keeping 20 meters up the climb and then straight onto a descent where it maybe extended to, I don't know, 40 or 50. But yeah, maybe in that second group, there was a little more bunching up, but if the referees
was that Patrick Lynch group?
It was when if you go look at Patrick on his Instagram said that he was really trying to like take it into his own hands and push the pace. And yeah, when that group caught me, he was on the front like hammering it. Like he was going really hard on the front of that group. I assume.
There was a couple of times in the coverage where he was on the front of the group, and yeah, he was riding hard, and he had a motorbike next to him. And when they went through tighter sections, the guys behind must have got so close to the motorbike they were like blowing up royally at the motorbike. So I was wondering if it was a bit less organized than the front group.
And yeah, Nick, that second group, yeah, too many people. I think it was there were a lot of people on the start line, and I think. There definitely couldn't have been any more people on the start line. It would have been too crazy. It was pretty crazy.
Nick, we do want to go back to your race. We only focused on that because we had a discussion in the chat. And if we're honest, we find it hard to believe someone runs 2:32, takes a poo, and didn't have media support. So it's interesting that he didn't. It makes the performance even more impressive, and it's incredible. So that's so all there is
even,
to it.
Even with the media support, Steve, even with the media support, it's normally the people behind him that would benefit. If they're to the side of him, it's the guys 2, 3, 4, 5 that get the big benefit, you know. I used to always say the best place to ride is behind the, you know, the Kona world champ because they're going to have cameras on them and you're the next guy back. That performance from Christian is like mind blowing.
So Nick, did the weather obviously cleared up, right? Because like, if you look through just the top 10, it must've been ideal marathon conditions because I looked through a few of the Strava set like files today and it looks like a genuine 42.2 or a little bit more, but if you just run through 2:32, 2:37, 2:38, 2:45, 2:35, 2:34, 2:41, 2:36. Like they're all just raging. Conditions must have been perfect.
Yeah. And it was like low 20s with a bit of drizzle. I didn't actually end up running, so I can't say whether it was good running conditions or not. Definitely. That was the fifth Ironman I've done. That was probably the coolest conditions. And I think people were just hungry. Like if you look at the guy from Netherlands who came fifth, Menno Coolhaas, who ran 2:35, on the same corner as me at 60K, he also came off. And while I was trying to put my chain back on, he went off and rode the next 120K solo and held off the second chase group on the bike and then ran a 2:35. I think, and obviously there are some huge standout performances as well in the, not even the top 10, but I'm sure there were heaps of others that ran like low 240s, high 230s in the whole race. But yeah, maybe low 20s with a bit of drizzle made for good running conditions as well.
The results are just that, Dave. If you go through like one that stood out for a negative in a way is like one of the guys who got off at the front of the race ran a 3:15 and finished 38th. You know, we were talking.
Was that Clavel?
I wasn't going to throw him under the bus, but yeah, it was Nick.
Yeah,
nice one. Yeah, like like they throw it out there and like 3:15. I mean, it's not professional level, but it's not like a absolute stonker. And he's like 38th. That must have been an incredibly demoralizing day for him.
Yeah, I remember when I was riding with his group, he was working pretty hard though. But yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? That you can just be a little bit off and goodbye to top 10, top 20, top 30.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a few ones that we were talking about earlier today in the chat, and it's like one of the facts that came through to me was the winner of the age group race yesterday would have been in basically a sprint finish with Frodeno in 2018 at that race. That's how far we've come. So it's,
wow,
it's a shit way to make a living, guys. So anyway, no.
Where were you in your race report? I don't know how far we were into that. So keep going if there was more. How late did I come?
Second crash and then he pulled it.
Yeah, it was okay until the first crash and then not so good until the second crash. And then that was at about 150 on the bike and I rolled back into town for a bit with Trevor Foley, who was a bit over it as well, but he was saying to me that he was pretty happy with just calling it a day because he had some exceptional results the last few weeks anyway, and yeah, it was good to have a chat, but yeah, felt a bit silly just soft pedaling down to town and then not running, but I think at that point, because after my second crash, I was a bit dazed and I just thought I'd sit down for a bit until I felt like I could ride upright back to town. And I think at that point I was 30 minutes behind a lot of people. And then as I pulled the pin, Ben Hamilton came into transition. He's like, let's go, mate. Let's go for a run. And I was like, absolutely not. And later I found out that he had to run his bike up a few hills because of a crash and derailleur problems. So props to him for then running. That wasn't for me. And
you've got Kona coming up, don't you? It's a smart decision if you're making a living off this sport to pull it and then you'll go to Sunny Coast and Kona, I'm assuming. Is that right?
Yeah. Like I don't like not finishing the race, but running a marathon when you're already a bit banged up and tired would only just set you back a few weeks, right? So I'll go to Sunny Coast and try and stay upright. It's just out and back with a few corners in town. Yeah.
Nick, do you reckon there's I'm just at the bottom of the PTO list and there's quite a number of DNFs and some of them are big names. So was there just a shit ton of crashes out there that maybe ended a few people's day?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know for sure, but I think maybe Mike Phillips would have crashed as well because he was in a group and then he wasn't. The Swedish guy, Jesper Svensson, who was in the front group as well, crashed again. Obviously, on the Ironman account, you saw the leader of the race, Christian Hogenhaug, he pretty much did everything right, took a corner pretty conservatively and still slid out. And I'm sure there would have been a number of others. Like when I pulled the pin in T2, there was this Swiss guy, Sam Herzler, who was all bloodied up just everywhere, but then still went for a run. And I'm sure there would have been a number of others. I reckon they're probably in the pro field would have been probably at least 20 to 30 that hit the deck. And my coach that was watching on one of the corners said that, yeah, he saw not just pros, but age group has just all come down. But that's why anyone that's managed to stay upright and still perform really well, it just makes it really impressive because anyone that had a good result just proves how sort of technically sound they are and strong as well. Like it wasn't a nice day. Like it wasn't very enjoyable. Those top guys are super impressive with their results on that day. It was not fun.
I don't want to get too deep, Nick, but someone who I'm supporting at the Duathlon World Champs in Townsville had a day that they wanted a better day, basically. And for age groups, they don't have another race coming up, so it's pretty disappointing when they train for so long and it goes wrong. So I got asked by Lee, my mate, who I watched, how do you deal with a bad performance? How do you swallow it and move on? How do you move on quickly? Because it's so disappointing, or, you know, you wanted more out of it and you don't have an opportunity again soon. You do, and that's why you pulled the pin, which is great for a pro. But how do you deal with this kind of performance? Because I was kind of stumped by the question. I don't really deal with it that well. Reedy knows how angry I get.
Yeah. The way I see it is, like, I would say, like, be proud of the work that you've made to get yourself in a position to take that opportunity. I'm pretty happy personally with the training that I managed to do, and I feel like I am a better athlete. So I would just say to them, like, you just got to remember that when, after all this lead up and preparation, when the next opportunity does come around, whenever that may be, you are going to be stronger and better for it, even though it's frustrating that it becomes just, you know, waiting around and you can't just go and prove to yourself and others, like, right away.
From yesterday, Nick, you'd have to be like, take a fair few positives out of it, hey? Like, you were front pack swim in a really solid field, non-wetsuit. You know, you're on the back of the main group and it didn't feel crazy hard for you. Like, you take those, move forward, and then, you know, for Kona, you know that you can be a bit better and right in the mix.
Yeah, that as well. Like, even though I was only really racing properly for a couple of hours in an 8-hour race, I'll still, try and find a few positives. And like you said, those are the things that I'll take away. If I think back to maybe in December when I raced you guys in Busfield and Steve, and I was over 4 minutes behind you guys in the swim, and I thought, oh, I can probably knuckle down a bit and try and get a bit better. It's nice to see. Oh, that's the beautiful thing about the sport. Like, you can see, even if the end result of the race isn't what you wanted, at least you've got, like, you can kind of compartmentalize into, okay, I did this part well. I did this part well. I did 90% of things well, but maybe 10% of things went wrong and you're still not happy. I think that's, like, a lot of people that get into triathlon in a way have put high standards on themselves, and if it's not a race where everything almost goes well and you hit everything you know you can from your training, you're not happy. But you guys would know as well. You might have a day that things go perfectly once a year, not even almost. So yeah, take the small wins, I suppose.
Good attitude. I like it. I think your attitude summed up in the Busselton encounter between us two when I caught you on the run, overtook you, and then we were running together for like a second and you were just like, well done, man. Well done. Obviously, you could hear the disappointment in your voice, but you'd conceded fourth and you're like, I'm pretty happy with that. I'm pretty happy with that. And I'm like,
yeah,
way more than you know. And then you came back past me and it was cooler seeing you get on the podium that day.
But I guess everything happens for a reason, right? Then you kind of dug deep between Busselton and New Zealand and then went and won that race, which is arguably, you know, huge, much, much nicer than a minor podium position than in little old Busselton, right?
It saved me a lot of money as well. I was going to buy your kind of slot off you for like 10 grand.
I reckon your performance at Busso, I think, might have been a bit underrated. Like, obviously, Backgarden, as we call him here, you know, was, you know, obviously amazing and stuff. But I remember I was with you, Clint, or nearby you, when you got off the bike, Nick, at Busso, and we were like looking at ourselves, obviously rooting for Steve at the time, like, oh, Steve's good, he's cramping, he's. And then you fucking pulled a podium out. It was great.
Yeah, I remember. I'm sure you guys have had this, but I remember just in the last 30K, I was seeing stars and couldn't even hold TT position. I was sliding forward because I didn't have enough carbohydrate. But I don't know what happened there.
No one could have had enough carbohydrates. So I was watching how hard you rode the bike. I was like, mate, there was nothing saving a little bit of a bonk on that ride.
And you went through T2 and you looked like a 17-hour completer of an Ironman, mate. You looked rubbish. I'm not going to lie. I was laughing at how bad it was. And then you pulled that out. So very impressive.
Very tough. Wow.
Yeah, definitely got some mongrel. Hey, Nick, what did you – I'm just curious, did you grow up doing one of the three sports or how did you get into triathlon? I mean, I reckon you're a clear example for me of one of the greatest talents people need in this sport is just like bucket loads of mongrel. And has that always been there as a kid? Did you love just competing and what sports did you do?
I guess in – through primary school, a little bit of like short course swimming, but never really did anything too competitively. And yeah, like late teenage years, I was pretty useless, to be honest. I think when I was 17 or 18, I did a 1 hour 25 sprint distance as my first triathlon, which was in 2018. But yeah, like if I was in a sprint finish for a win, would I give everything and end up vomiting on the finish line? I don't know. But most days I'll try and get the best out of myself. But yeah, didn't have much mongrel in me yesterday, sadly. But hopefully for the next one, the dog returns.
It's interesting. I always say to athletes, you know, you've only got so many times that you can go to the well, and you don't want to, like, it gets less as you get older, but you don't want to waste it on a time on a occasion when it really doesn't count for much. You know, I think there's certain times when you got to go, okay, cool. It's, you know, it'd be nice to do the best I could here and just run for no reason, but it might take away from going to the depths of hell in Kona, and you need to protect yourself mentally to be able to go deep and win the biggest races. And I know for me, it was like in the later stages of my career, I reckon it was, I could only dig deep probably three or four times a year, even twice a year, really.
Whereas when I first started, man, there was so much dog in me, I'd fight for everything, you know? And but every time I was starting to whittle down that resilience, and the brain's starting to go, all right, settle down, champ. That's enough. You know, like you can't keep killing yourself. So bring the dog out, but let the dog out only when he needs to be let out.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, because the last three races I've done this year, I went to New Zealand and did Challenge Wanaka and had an absolute shocker and felt shit all day, but still, like you said, just tried to dig deep just to finish. And then I went to Ironman Texas and started feeling shit with 5 hours to go in the race after being in a good position, which was, again, just mentally like, oh, here we go. And then in Cairns, when I thought I worked pretty hard to get close to the front of the race, and then like just lost concentration for a second and got the 5 minute penalty for drafting, just when I'd kind of worked pretty hard to put all the eggs into catching the front. That was, again, the next 5 hours were crappy and I crashed as well. So I think you're right. Like yesterday would have been maybe the fourth time this year where I would have, after the second time I crashed yesterday, you're spot on. Like I just said to myself, I can't really go through another miserable run again. And hopefully you're right. Like by the time it gets to when I have to dig deep in Kona, maybe the mind is a bit more fresh and wants it even more to avoid this sort of feeling of disappointment.
I'm sorry that happened. You've had a bad run, but I feel like when it rains, it pours in this sport for a pro.
Speaking of bad run and then into Kona, Steve.
It's also pouring on me at the moment, Nick, so don't worry. Pouring viruses.
We should do an intro for you, Steve. It's been a while. So we've got special guest, Steve McKenna on his own show.
So Danny, you might remember Steve from such things as like your 16th birthday and stuff like that. Family Christmas.
Applied to him since.
It's been a while.
Steve, tell us about what you're doing and how your Kona prep's going. If you don't mind, Nick, you can hang up if you want, Nick, if you get bored.
I'm only going to do like
I'm curious to hear this.
No, I had a lot of viruses every second week with childcare, and then we went to Airlie Beach in Townsville, and I'd already put together, whilst on antibiotics, I'd already put together like 2 weeks of training, still coughing a lot, but slowly the antibiotics worked, got rid of it. I've had like 6 weeks now training without any sickness because I've been 2,432 kilometers away from childcare. So that's 6 weeks. I'm actually kind of fit now. I'm requiring a lot more endurance for Kona to make up for all that lost time. Yeah, it was a period of like every second week, and that's Adelaide winter, and that's why we don't usually stay home, but with a newborn this year is a special one, so less racing and a longer prep for Kona, and it ended up being very short because of the viruses. But who knows, I haven't raced much, so there might be some dog, even if I'm not fit. A bit of dog with me and Nick will hopefully do something to make Aussies proud at Kona, because I don't think Max Newman's going to be there this time, so maybe we are some of the hope for Australia along with Burton, I guess. I don't know who else, but yeah.
Appo got a spot.
Oh yeah, Appo.
So yeah, From now until then, Steve, what's the plan?
So I'm in Townsville to do the race next weekend, and then just keep pushing. I've done a lot of heat prep for Townsville just to test whether it was whether it worked, and I have noticed a very, very low heart rate lately and sweating a lot quicker. So yeah, it seems to have done something. Like you can get. It can look very fit based on like, you know, running at like 102 heart rate for 5 minute pace sometimes. But But then, like, I haven't done the work, so I've got a lot of work to do. So I'm just going to do this one race. And yeah,
and, if you're staying at 20K, because you never measure HRV, we don't actually know whether you've just got suppressed heart rate from being really tired.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whether you're actually fitter.
So I rested a few days and still saw a low heart rate. I'm like, oh, okay, it's not just fatigue. And then I have been doing this. Like, I didn't believe in Whoop. So I don't know. Has anyone got any data on Whoop being valid or not? Because I didn't.
No, it's not terrible.
Okay. And then so I got an Aura ring. And I wear it, like, you know, maybe every third night.
Great. Now, the Aura ring's pretty good.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But sleep's improved heaps because Winnie, Reedy, I think you gave me the courage to do this. We talked about how your third child, Edgar, you kind of gave up and just let him sleep in the bed. So me and Lauren chatted after that and we just said, all right, Steve, you're sleeping with Winnie and I'm sleeping with Lily. And so I just sleep in Winnie's bed now and she doesn't have these big nightmares because everyone's in one room and she's in by herself and the jealousy and the I'm losing my parents to this fetus was kind of a huge for our family for a while. She'd bring home viruses and scream for like 2 hours from 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Now it's still changed. We're sleeping heaps better. And,
the biggest winner out of all that is Lauren, who now doesn't have to sleep with Steve.
Yeah. There's so much room in the bed without my schnoz in there.
You're going up to Townsville, aren't you, Reedy?
Yeah, I'm leaving Thursday. I was going to go help out at the Nerd Belt tent. Actually, we should announce I'll be doing sweat testing out of the Nerd Belt tent. So email me at info@rpgcoaching.com because if you just roll up, you're not going to be able to get a spot. I don't have the energy to do dozens of people, so I'm going to spread it out and book them in. But we don't just, you know, it's not just a straight up recommendation. We really, you know, we really take into account lots of things like past issues with digestion in races. Ideally, you know, your sweat losses to a certain degree. We find out your sodium concentration in your sweat. And then we look at finding the best fuel and hydration source for you.
Nice. I mean, we've talked about this before. And like when I did it with you in Busso, I think.
Yeah.
We ended up realizing that I was taking half the amount of sodium that I needed or that, you know, that test suggested would be good. And I have not had a gut issue since in a race. I've only raced 2 or 3 more times, but I've always had some sort of gut issue, whether it be the end or halfway through. And I had absolutely nothing since. So definitely worth
it. Yeah, it's really interesting, Denny. I think a lot of people blame their gut issues on their fuel that they have. Most of the time, I think it's more the amount of fluid that they're taking in or not taking in, and it's the sodium concentration that's actually the problem. And I reckon 2/3 of people were reducing the sodium intake and 1/3 were putting it up, just as a generalization. But yeah, it's one of those tests. It's not cheap because it's a really expensive piece of machinery, but it could literally change your racing experience, you know, long term if you get it right. So.
Well, I disagree. Like, it's only, what, $200 for you to test someone. And when you talk to anyone that does triathlon, $200 is absolutely nothing.
Yeah, really, I reckon it's cheap. I agree. Yeah, it's so cheap.
It's actually more than that, but let's just keep that so people keep emailing.
and also, but on that, Reedy, you've tested a few people who have been tested previously and the numbers are very similar, right? So, like, if you get your figure, it helps you long-term.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I've done people that weren't heat-adapted and became heat-adapted, and yes, you can lower your sodium concentration with heat adaption. It's one of the benefits, but it's not like if you're a salty sweater, you're not going to suddenly change your category. Like, you're still going to be a salty sweater. You might just have 15 to 20% less sodium losses. So you can make it a little bit different. And yeah, we've seen people, I've tested people back-to-back days and it's been bang on the same. And there's plenty of tests out there that are giving horrific results. And people are, I think, almost poisoning themselves on race day with really poor testing. So be careful.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Did you tell me when we did that test that you only really have to do it a couple of times? Like, over time, your results shouldn't really change. Like,
You only really need to do it once. And if you're not heat adapted for that test, know that you can lower it a little bit,
milligrams of sodium per liter of sweat. Like once you're in the ballpark, your sodium replacement doesn't have to be spot on. It just has to be within the ballpark, and you can actually go slightly less, you know, on the safe side with a lot of the time. It's not like fueling where you're trying to find the maximum amount you can tolerate. You know, you're always going to be taking in less than you're losing, but it's about, you know, optimizing the absorption of fluid more than anything.
Sorry, Nick, we forgot that
you're on the show.
Well, no, it's interesting. It's interesting to know.
I'll get you in before Conan, Nick. We'll get you sorted.
Sunny Coast, there you go.
I'll do pro discount, 3% off.
One last thing before we wrap it up, and it's just doing my head in and I can't work out. Why did Patrick Lang have his shoes in an icebox? Does anyone know the answer to this?
Sorry, no. were they immersed in ice water or in an icebox?
They were in an icebox in T2. He got there and like pulled out this esky like he was having a packed lunch and opened it, and there's his shoes in there in an icebox.
But were they sitting on ice?
Nah.
Ice packs. There was heaps of ice packs. That's like ice.
I just can't wrap my head around it.
So what I'm trying to understand, is he keeping the shoes cool? Yeah. Or was he just keeping in there to keep it airtight?
No, cool. There was ice packs.
Okay. Maybe it makes the foam like even more bouncy. Like I can tell you a top German pro who I won't say too much just in case I'm not allowed to share, but he used to spray his tires with WD-40 right before a race, let it soak in, and it used to make them just that little bit more supple. It's like another 1 or 2 watts you could save. Sebastian? So I'd say Patrick's found out something like cold foam gives an extra 2% bounce or something.
Well, everyone going to Kona, pack an esky.
God, it's getting too much, this crap. I can't keep up with it, and I don't want to.
Mate.
Yeah.
It's Reedy's a very solid proponent for just same equipment, race in the same everything, and just get out there and the best person wins.
Mate, I would love it. If you turn up as a pro, they give you a bike and it's got an adjustable seat post.
Yeah.
that's all. And it's like every person just has to ride a piece of shit bike.
They have to run in Dunlop KT 26. Yeah, volleys or 20 KT 26s.
Yeah.
And for the swim, you get just goggles and that's it. Nothing.
Yeah.
Well, it's turning into Formula One where the best guys, the best teams,
well,
you can't compete with them sometimes. Yeah.
Well, I don't think Nick obviously knows something because I don't think anyone can compete with that aerodynamic haircut of his. So.
That is, yeah. Quint, is this episode brought by Gary or
no? Gary's still percolating, mate. Six or seven days over, and I'm not very good at playing the waiting game, mate. So
that is horrible for you guys.
We're all waiting.
Sorry. Yeah, I can't really whinge, but anyway.
Yeah, when you think you're going to go 3 weeks early and you're still waiting a month later, that's pretty hard.
The worst. But I can't whinge because someone else is probably a bit more uncomfortable than I.
Steve, have you got any, like, would you rathers before we go?
Oh, yeah, I could give Nick a standard one. Nick's got a funny sense of humor, actually. So we'll see what he says. Nick, would you rather have cooked penne as your fingers for the rest of your life? And if you ever eat them, they will grow back, but they're pretty overcooked. They're a bit sloppy. So it's hard to grab things. It's possible.
Yeah.
And maybe they're like sticky because they're so overcooked. So you could grab things
We get it.
We've done this one. We've had this on the show 3 times.
Yeah, but I want Nick's got a good sense of humor. He might answer it differently. Would you
it's an A or B answer.
Or would you rather eat dry penne for the rest of your life, but you hit all the nutritional benchmarks, but you have your fingers.
Oh, how quickly do your fingers grow back if you eat them? like a fingernail sort of thing? Oh, straight away.
Yeah, just like immediately. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can think of a few things in particular that would be difficult to do with sloppy penne fingers.
Let me come back to that.
I struggle at the best of times.
I had a drunk girl ask me once, would you rather be a dog with no thoughts or a man with half a head and no limbs?
But you got your thoughts.
Wait, half a head. So, right, you're losing. You've lost the top of your head.
She never explained it.
Probably not the dog with no thoughts, right? Or maybe no. I'll go hard penne. Was that it? Hard? Did you say hard penne?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll go. To be honest, day after the race, I'm kind of over all this being a human stuff. I'll go dog with no thoughts. I'm fed up with the disappointment. I'm just running now.
Yeah. Okay. Here's one. You'd love it.
Here's one for you, Nick. Everyone in the Kona race gets monkeypox mid race. All your competitors. Mid-race. You don't catch it because you've been exposed to monkeys before for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And do you know that, and you win the race, but everyone else is just covered in stuff and like doing all the monkeypox things. Do you claim it at the finish? Like, you know, arms up, I won the race, or are you a bit embarrassed?
No, embarrassed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Scenario.
Couldn't.
I did not think we could stoop any lower, but we have got there, Jeff.
Reedy, is that similar to winning Townsville? You could not call yourself a world champ in my eyes.
If you win that race, you put those rainbow stripes on everything. Yeah, almost everything. You shave your head and it goes straight around the forehead like a sweatband, Steve.
I don't think anyone in the race is qualified for Kona. So
speaking of that race, I was talking to Steve yesterday and we realized that what's his name, Steve? The Spaniard who's like one of the favorites, Benito Lopez.
Lopez is his last name. Yeah.
He won Ironman Victoria. So he's racing this Sunday against Steve, but he raced the duathlon champs Sunday gone as well. Now it's only a sprint distance, but I don't know. Is that a bit weird?
Depends how much some of these guys are doing. Big volume, I think it'd be fine. A little tune-up race. I think Steve's got extra pressure now because he's bagging out the race for the quality of it. And now if you get beaten.
If you claim it even slightly at the finish line, we're going to cut back to this and put a reels up about.
No, but you know what? I look at it and I just want to be honest. It's not a world champ level field. It's a 70.3 somewhere in the world field. That's the strength of it, I'd say. You wouldn't go around going, I'm the world champ. You can't. I don't think you should. If I did by chance win it, have this amazing day and win it, I'd probably say, oh yeah, Townsville something, something world champ. Townsville winner. And then you'd say it is a, I don't know. I'd have to explain it.
I 100% think that you could then be very, every conversation you have with Reedy, it's like, yeah, that's like when we won our world titles, you know?
Yeah. All right. Actually, I'll do this. If I win, I'll get my hair colored in the rainbow.
Oh, why are you even doing this again, Stephen?
Yeah.
No. I'll get a frolic and I'll color it in a rainbow.
Oh.
Just finish the race and make a W as you come across world champ. I honestly think you can't control who gets on the start line. Everyone knows if there's a title up for grabs or not. You don't have to brag to us that you won world title because we'd all tell you to shut up and it wasn't a real world title. But when it comes to sponsors, I would be signing off every email. You know, kind regards, Steve McKenna, 2024 world champion, every time.
And the field is not, it's a strong field. There's some of those Spaniards and French that are in the race, and then obviously a bunch of the Aussie blokes. You're up against it.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's not like, you know, you go to Kona, that's so different. That's a world champ. You know,
you go to Frankfurt. That was a world champ.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I just don't want to, yeah, anyway, I don't want to bag anyone in the race. There's some great quality athletes, but I think they would all admit, like me, it's not Frankfurt or Kona. So, yeah.
Are you lying down, Steve?
Yeah, I got my legs elevated.
Oh, okay. I just wasn't sure. If you picture you standing up, well, it looks like you've got like a really big neck, but you're standing up. It's quite funny.
Nah. I do have a bit of a thumb situation, though, generally. Lack of chin.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Yeah.
I feel like we didn't really talk much to you, Nick, but sorry about that.
I only had 2/3 of a race to talk about anyway, so it worked out pretty well.
Well, Nick, reckon you're going to be a serious force to be reckoned with. You're you've done some insane things, and we were all very much expecting good things from you at Frankfurt, and don't be disappointed by that. I think that just means we really do think you're good enough to do really big things on a world stage. So, yeah, it'll happen, and it's exciting to watch.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll see if we can, I don't know, put a little bit of a spanner in the works in Kona. But, yeah, no crashes in Kona, I'm hearing. Touch wood. Out and back with a couple corners in town. Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Great. All right.
Wait, thanks, mate.
Thanks, guys. Cheers, Nick.
See ya.
See you, guys. Thank you. Yeah.